beautiful. And what I want to know is, what is really good in your life today? I'm Kia, and this is another episode of the Female Veterans Podcast. Today, I have Allison with me. She is another shipmate of mine, and you know how excited I get every time I get a chance to speak with a veteran sister who served in the Navy. It's just so special to me. And Allison has an incredible beauty products business. It is CBD infused products, which is super exciting to me, as you know, that I am all for alternative medications that can help you feel and look amazing. And she is a mother of two and a wife and a very, very, very new veteran. She's been out a week from the reserves, but she did serve 7 years active duty. So she's got both experience of reserve and active, and now she's a vet. So welcome to the podcast.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me.
I am thrilled that you're here, and I can't wait to find out what your military experience was like.
I am so excited that I get to talk with another female veteran about these kinds of experiences. This is so amazing.
I mean, it's the best part. It's literally why I do this podcast, because I really just love to connect with my sisters. So I'm going to ask you my first question, and that is, why did you join the military?
Oh, gosh. I was 25 when I enlisted. So I have a little bit of a different story than people who enlist at the age of 18. Mm-hmm. I had tried to go to college twice. I had been working in retail for 8 years at that point in time. And I was trying to go back to school again, and I couldn't afford it. I was making too much working in retail to qualify for grants. I couldn't quit work because I had to pay rent and it would take too long to get those grants. And I found myself just in this state of panic of how am I going to grow as a person? And someone suggested to me, have you ever thought about the military? And my first response was no, of course not. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. It's a very, very liberal place in which to grow up. I did not have many friends or family members that had been in the military or involved in the military. So I had these very stuck ideas of what kind of people were in the military. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's not really my jam. I marched in anti-war protests. I probably shouldn't join the military.
I was like that too. I totally vibe with that.
Yeah. But at the same time, I had done 8 years of retail, of selling my soul every day a little bit so I could get that 8% commission off those $99 shoes. Mm-hmm. And if I could do that, then I could handle combat boots for 6 years. And so that was how I ended up going into this mentality of going in and talking to a recruiter. And I ended up being very lucky in that my recruiter was one of those who was actually very honest with me, mm-hmm. who helped me actually read about the different rates. We went to the processing station MEPS 3 times. Before we found a job that I was okay with, that I wanted to go into. And so having that initial positive experience with the recruiter helped kind of pave my way as I moved forward and went to boot camp at the age of 25.
Wow. I cannot even imagine just going in at 25. I went in at 19, and it was mm-hmm. then. And I always say this too, I was a total like neo hippie. Like I was so far the opposite, and people would say to me, you're going to the military? Like people who
yes.
grew up with me. were stunned that that was what my choice was. And it wasn't even like I was going to go to college. I was going straight. Like, I went in delayed, but I was going straight in from high school. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious. So as a 25-year-old, sort of older than all the other E1s and the Smurfs, as we were called, what was boot camp like for you?
Boot camp was easy. So because I was older, I went into boot camp understanding, one, that these people there that are yelling at me, that's their job. It's nothing personal. They don't actually think these horrible things. They're just trying to motivate you. And what a lot of people who see like movies about boot camp, what they don't understand is that the military, and this goes for all branches, they have to break you down so you can follow the smallest rules, like making your bed properly. Because if you can't be trusted to do those simple tasks, then how can you be trusted to handle large weaponry? How can you be trusted to handle secure communications in a combat information center? Mm-hmm. So it seems so trivial and something that we can laugh at or something that we can scoff at when we see it in television shows and in the movies. And I think that when we're younger, when we're 17, 18, and 19, we're so much more emotional that we take those things so seriously. And by the age of 25, I had a little bit more life experience. And so I knew this is just the first phase. I was the same age as the people yelling at me. You know, like, you don't scare me. You go ahead and keep yelling. I'm not that scared. I understand it's your job, and I'll do what you ask me to do.
It is a different perspective when you're looking at it like we're the same age, but you're in charge of me. It just, mm-hmm. it does make it different somehow.
I felt more like they were my peers. Mm-hmm. They were still leadership, because you can be a peer and still be a leader, mm-hmm. but they weren't, you know, super angry. I'm just going to yell at you people to make your life miserable.
Mm-hmm. So scary. They weren't scary.
They weren't scary.
So did you make any connections in boot camp? Did you have any friendships there that are notable?
Yes. I still call her, she is one of my best friends, Tony. She and I were just, so she's 5 years older than me. So she was the mama bear, cause she was 30 going to boot camp, and she, you know, was this wonderfully down to earth, amazing, sweet human being who's also absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. And she could just make everybody feel at ease. She made the best jokes. And she, again, like, she wasn't intimidated by these people that were there yelling at us, because she was 5 years older than them too. Mm-hmm. And she was in the same mentality. And we ended up living together on and off after we both went through our schooling, which took an additional year and change. We were both stationed on different ships in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And she took me in when my first marriage ended and let me live with her. She's also out of the Navy now. She did her 6 years and she was done. Mm-hmm. And she is doing some amazing things. She lives over in Atlanta. But she's come over to see me in Portland once, and we're planning for me to get out there. I want to go to New Orleans really badly. Mm-hmm. So she's going to take me out there. But she is from boot camp. She is my, I could pick up the phone at 2 a.m. and call her and say, I need you on a plane here tomorrow. And she would get on that plane and be here. No questions.
That's beautiful. I love that. You know, it's so often that you don't keep those connections. And so when I hear, that's why I always ask that question, because it makes me feel so happy when I hear that people who met in boot camp remain connected and just have, you know, had such a wonderful lifelong or long-term friendship because of it. It's such a unique experience. It's a crazy bond. And I can just imagine how incredible it is to just still be in one another's lives.
It's very, oh, I am so sorry. My 3-year-old just fell.
Okay.
Hang on, buddy. Okay.
So you mentioned that you went to A school and C school, and while you were friends with your girl from boot camp, and you guys kept in touch. So you guys were friends long after boot camp, which is amazing. And you went to A school and C school, you said that. What Yep. were those experiences like for you? Tell me about your military experience.
So I'll start with what I am. I am an electronics technician, an ET. I am a communications technician. So I worked on radios and communications gear. Being in a technical field means that you are constantly surrounded by men. Being a female in the military in the technical field, it's even more so of, it's not just that I'm in the military, which has so few females in it already. It's that I also then chose, because I did choose my job and my rate, to go into a specifically technical field. And it was a lot of fun. It taught me things that I didn't know that I had within me. I found a love of working with hardware. I found a love of working in software and of coding in languages. And I learned how to be a little bit louder and how to stand up a little bit taller, because as a female, I had to work that much harder to be recognized for being as good as I was. So I fought harder and I came out top of my class.
So you definitely, it sounds like, felt that you had to, even though you were good, you had to work even harder than the guys to get the same amount of recognition.
Yes. And the military is great when it comes to equality in that it pays you the exact same pay no matter if you're a man or a woman. So that's fantastic. And you get medical benefits no matter what. And all of these other things that can be very beneficial, but it is still a man's world and it is still an old boys club. And that meant that when I would go to tell somebody that something was wrong, I was not treated with the same amount of respect for knowledge that my male counterpart would have received.
Do you have any examples of that?
There was a system that I worked on when I was on my ship that I can't count the number of times that it would break, and I would say what needed to be done for it to be fixed, and I would be told that I was wrong, it was something else, and then say my now husband, who I actually was stationed with and worked on the system with me, would go say the same thing, and they'd be like, oh, that might be the issue, that might fix it, and so they would listen to him. Even though we'd been in the military for the same amount of time, we were the same rank. There was the only difference being that I am a woman. I faced it at my shore command that I went to after I was on a ship. I busted my butt when I got to my shore command. I was pregnant. Being pregnant, I could not actually work on my gear. And pregnant women in the Navy have a really big stigma attached to them that they just want to sit around and do nothing all day, and they just want to be at a shore command, and they're not really good workers, and they're just kind of useless in everything they do.
Wow. Still?
So I was, oh yeah.
I mean, I feel like, because I served such a long time ago, that would have been the case, or maybe even before that in military history, when women were less common, even less than they are now, it would be more of an issue. But it's surprising to me that you just are coming out and this is still an issue.
A baby is not issued in your sea bag is a phrase that has been used since women joined the military. And it's a phrase that I have heard while I was in the military in the last 9 years. It's So, and it's not just men that say it. Women say it too. And so at my shore command, I worked very, very hard to distinguish myself as not being that girl. I became the work center supervisor. I became the assistant lead petty officer. While the LPO was gone on convalescent leave for months, I ran it. I ran the shop. I ran us through a huge, huge inspection, which we not only passed, but we helped set benchmarks for. I never was put up for an award, not until the end of my time there. I never was put up for Sailor of the Quarter or Junior Sailor of the Quarter or Sailor of the Year. The people that were put up were the boys that would go out smoking with the LPO and the chief. Mm-hmm. And when I took a month of maternity leave that was given to me, I came back and walked in my shop that I had been in charge of for a year, year and a half, to find that I had been demoted from being the assistant leading petty officer to working in a different shop under a second class.
Wow.
And I guarantee you that any male that would have taken a month off of convalescent leave for some sort of surgery, like my LPO did, would not have gotten the same demotion. But because I am a woman and I have children, and so I took leave that was given to me, I was demoted.
Well, how do you know without a doubt, like, how can you be so sure that the demotion was just because of you having a baby and taking leave?
Nobody's ever going to explicitly say it. But you see the stories of it happen everywhere when women take maternity leave, and the reasons for it vary. But I can also see who they put in charge and how they treated the women there versus how they treated the men, and how they liked to put the women up in administrative roles instead of working in the shop, and how when the men, because it was at a command where we had a lot of LIMDU personnel, limited duty personnel. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of broken people with a lot of appointments, and a lot of people had to take leave. Not one male was demoted for taking leave. I was there for 3 years.
And you saw other females treated the same way?
Yes. They used to ring a cowbell when the women in the shop who had babies would go pump milk.
What?
Yeah.
A cowbell?
They would ring a cowbell.
For breastfeeding?
For breastfeeding.
So you have to be shamed. You have to be publicly, yes, publicly shamed for nursing your child in today's...
In today's... And this was... I was in the reserves. So this is 3 years ago.
Three years ago,
they would ring a cowbell, and women are scared to say anything, because if you say something, if you call out this abhorrent behavior that would get you fired from any civilian job, mm-hmm, you're automatically that bitch who can't take a joke.
Yeah, I know all about that. So that's been going on since the dawn of time. And I think that speaks to us as women. I have two questions I want to ask you right after I say this.
Okay.
It speaks to us as women that we have to assimilate into the culture of military. You know, like, mm-hmm, you said, it's a boys' club. And, you know, women are, historically speaking, I always say this, relatively new to that club. And so, mm-hmm, when you get there, you start learning rather quickly what you need to do in order to adapt and to survive. So it's sort of, yep, like a survival mechanism to accept certain behaviors that maybe you feel some cognitive dissonance with internally, because as a woman, maybe you wouldn't be okay with a cowbell being rung when another woman is nursing, but you keep your mouth shut because you don't want to be known as what you said earlier. And what brings me to my next question is that girl. Can you describe that girl so that we are all clear on it, in case someone hasn't had the same experience or who wasn't in the military and knows what that means?
So to me, and this may vary based on everyone's experiences that they've encountered, But that girl was, you didn't want to be that girl because that girl was either a bitch or a slut. Because that girl couldn't take a joke. Because that girl didn't understand why it was okay, this happened to me, for somebody to walk up to them in the P-way of the ship and not touch me, but reach out their fingers in front of my nipples and go purple nurple and keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My first week on the ship.
Wow.
Because this boys club allows this to happen. And when the women speak up about it, they are pushed out. I became vocal during my time in the military because I saw how it affected those around me and those that I became close with. And so I started to become that girl who tried to speak up and who would throw it back in people's faces when I had rumors of my pregnancy flying around before I was pregnant. And some guy goes, "Hey, are you pregnant?" I said, "Yeah, it's yours." He goes, "You can't say that. That might get back to my girlfriend." Well, then why can you say that about me? Like, do you get the joke? He didn't understand the irony. Like, he didn't get it. But it's a very difficult culture. And mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of the great people in the military, some thrive, some overcome it. And I have met some really amazing female chiefs and master chiefs, none of them ever directly that I've like worked with, but through forums on Facebook. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of really good ones out there.
Yeah.
But most of the people who speak up, they get out. I got out. My friends, they got out. You got out because you can't pay me enough for somebody to ring a cowbell for feeding my child.
Did that happen to you specifically?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it happened to me. It happened to the girls that I worked with. It was this running joke, like, "Oh, it's so funny. They're going to go nurse. They're a cow because they're producing milk."
Mm-hmm.
But it was a joke that they kept going for like 2 weeks.
Oh my God. So literally every time you had to nurse.
And we had probably 3 nursing moms in there. So the cowbell rang a lot.
How did that make you feel though? Cause I feel like I would have been just so upset and angry and want to cry, maybe. I don't know, but it feels like it would feel awful.
I got out of the military for a reason. The good did not outweigh the bad. And there is good. Some wonderful things happened to me in the military. I met my husband. I have 2 beautiful boys. I have my amazing friendships. Deployment was, while stressful, also a really amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of good, but it did not outweigh the bad, because when I do look back, I don't always remember the good things first. I don't remember when I got to do a swim call in the Mediterranean and jump off the back of a warship.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the feeling of pride that I had when we got to do a fleet week in New York. And I was on the USS Cole, which is a little piece of history. She was, for the listeners that may not know, she was bombed back in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not in the military at that point in time. But she was my ship and she was my home. And so I had this immense pride for that. But I don't remember those things first. I remember when I was active duty, being spoken down to because I was a female. I remember being told that because I had kids at home I had a child at home, even though I had a family care plan, and I was pregnant, but not far along, that I could not go and help set up an installation in Italy when I was the one that had created the program they wanted to set up.
Wow. That's harsh.
I remember those things. And So I just don't really talk about it much because who wants to hear that? Who wants to hear this? Woe is me, because you did all these really cool things too. So my friends that are civilians, they're wonderful and I love them. They don't need to hear it. But that's also where making friends with other female veterans is one of the most, I did not realize how much I was missing that connection in my life until I recently made a couple of friends at school that are Army veterans, and we connect in ways that I don't think I could connect with people that haven't been there and can understand. I may not have been in a war zone and I may not have been boots on ground, but just being in the military as a woman, you have this unique experience that nobody else does.
Amen to that, sister. I mean, you are preaching to the choir right now. And yeah. I will tell you one thing that I aim to do with this podcast, and I'm so glad that you're adding your We'll just wait it out.
There you are.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Perfect. So like I said, you're preaching to the choir, because I definitely believe that there is a culture of silence surrounding our military service as women. You know, mm-hmm. people just don't talk about it, because talking to civilians about it, they don't get it. So the more that we talk to each other and we get our stories out there, then, you know, the world can understand what we experience. Like, you experienced a cowbell being rung when you tried to nurse. Like, that is unfathomable to me. However, having served, I could totally see it. I could see it as clear as being in the room as if it happened to me. I could see it.
Yep.
So,
and a civilian could never see it, which is why it's so important to have these connections. Because if I told that story to my best friend, she would be so indignant for me, because she could never fathom it happening. I'm like, yeah, well, of course it happened. It's the military.
Mm-hmm. You know what else I bet she couldn't fathom happening is other women laughing when it happened. And that's something I wanted to ask you about too. What do you think makes these women go along? Like, you witnessed women going along, and it seems like it was something that really troubled you.
I think, and I went along with it when I first got to the ship, because you want to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
You want to fit in, and you are playing in the boys' world, which means that for you to fit in, you have to laugh at their jokes. You have to laugh when they're making fun of people, and you join in on it. Before long, you're the one saying those things and calling, you know, Susie a slut, because of course she was asking for it. There's no way that, you know, John ever would have raped her.
Oh my God.
She just was drinking too much. Mm-hmm. And that's how it goes. And I think that there's some self-hatred that happens. I think that there's a lot of insecurity that happens. And I say that as somebody that had to unpack their own insecurities. Like, I had to find my line, and I had to decide, was it worth it for me to potentially throw away a military career to draw my line? And a lot of people will just move their line because the military is all they have, or it's all that they want to have. Mm-hmm. If it is your dream in life to become, you know, the first female MCPON, or just to become a Master Chief in the Navy, and that's like your dream in life, you're going to do what you need to do to be accepted to move forward. Because if you're not well-liked, and you're that loud one, mm-hmm. then your evals, they're not going to be as good. And you're not going to be put up for as many awards. So you're not going to get those award points. And they may not approve for you to get tuition assistance to go to school so you can get your degree, so you can get your degree points. And maybe they're not going to let you go to do that volunteer thing because they're going to keep you at work a little bit longer because you're the troublemaker. And all of these little things build up. And then when you're sitting and you've sent in your package to the chief's board to see if you can get accepted to be a chief, your first big, big step, they see you compared to somebody else who is able to do all of those things because they kept their mouth shut and they weren't the troublemaker. And they're the ones that are going to move forward. It's not you.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. But so real and so true.
It's, there are some amazing female leaders trying to change that mentality. But there's still a very long way to go. There's still a very long way to go. And I hope and pray that one day it will be a much more accepting climate and things like cowbells will not happen.
I agree. I feel like you'd think that at this day and time, like we are, what, 2 months from 2020?
I know.
Right?
It's so weird.
It's so weird. And I just feel like so much progress should have been made by now that hasn't. It's almost like heartbreaking for me to do this interview with you and get like this update on the current status of, you know, equality in the Navy. And it's bad news.
I will say that there have been some really good strides with equality, specifically with maternity leave for women. When I had my first son, maternity leave was 6 weeks and that was it. And then you had to go back to work. And it was paid, which is much better than most private employers here in the right. United States. So even 6 weeks, I was grateful for. The Navy then turned around and granted 18 weeks of maternity leave. It was the longest. It was the most forward-thinking. They were allowing people to take it in increments so you could break it up if you didn't want to do the whole thing at once.
Right.
And they backdated it to anyone who had a child under the age of one.
That's beautiful.
It was the most beautiful thing that the Navy could have done. And the policy had to be adjusted here and there. So now it's down to 12 weeks because it's hard to excuse somebody for 18 weeks from a shop, just manpower-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But big Navy, like the policymakers are trying. They are trying to push for equality, and I recognize that. I appreciate how what they say, their stances on things like equality and sexual assault. They recently allowed women to wear ponytails instead of buns. It's a little thing, but you know what? That's awesome. For Black women, they allow natural locks. They are allowing afros. So there's been a lot of positive steps. But the top leadership and the people on the ships, that's a vast,
I built a big ship.
My son is telling you he built a big ship.
That's so cool.
I built a big ship.
I know, buddy. Hey, let mommy finish, okay?
Awesome. But I got pumpkin.
Okay.
What else did you see?
Oh. So, I'm so sorry. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, so it's just, it's as the old guys, not right now, as the older guys leave the Navy and other branches of service and retire out, die out, we will make forward progress. It will happen. It's slowly happening. And hopefully there will be women that are stronger than me, that are stronger than, you know, you, that are willing to stay in and be that girl to make that change. Because the military was a great experience on so many levels. And I want to share the positive stories to encourage people. But I also, when I have somebody come to me and say, my 17-year-old daughter is looking at enlisting, what can you tell her? I'm going to give her the hard truths as well. And I would love to see a time in my lifetime where I don't have to give those hard truths anymore, where I can say, do it. It will be the coolest thing you ever do. You'll meet the best friends of your life. You'll go on adventures you never imagined.
Mm-hmm. I definitely identify with that. My 17-year-old niece recently asked me, you know, I'm thinking of going into the Air Force. What do you think? And I talked to women who are veterans and I hear their stories. And I told her, being in the military is an amazing experience, but I want you to listen to my podcast first and listen to all the stories, good and bad, and then make an educated decision. And I also said that I had always wanted to go ROTC, but I could not commit to the time that would have been required of me for the Navy because I just knew that I was like your friend. I knew that I was going to come in for my 5 years and then I'd do my inactive reserve and then I'd be done.
Yeah.
And so I knew that that was the case for me, but I told her, listen, if you're thinking about making a career of it, consider going ROTC. But first, listen to the podcast, talk to other women who have served and make an educated decision. So I definitely understand where you're coming from with that, as well as hoping for women who are strong that go in and stand up and say, hey, this is not right. And they make waves. And hopefully it will trickle down from Big Navy, the changes that they're trying to make, because I think it's a slow move from the top down. And that's why there's such a delay in seeing the progress that they are trying to make. And one more thing I'd like to say, and you may probably agree with this, is that the way they handle situations like sexual harassment and military sexual trauma and stalkers and, you know, all of these situations where women are afraid to report, I'd love to see the way these cases are handled in the military improve. And I definitely love that you called out women who are victim shaming that are in the military right now who go along and will call this girl a slut, will tell this one she's a liar, who will participate even in the setup sometimes of the military sexual trauma and call them out and let them know that, hey, we see you. You know, you're there and that needs to change because all of those attitudes need to change in order for it to really improve.
For any woman that wants to say that, you know, oh, well, it was a house party and we were in port and she was drinking a lot, obviously she wanted him, I would challenge them to ask themselves if they would say the same thing about a woman who was walking home maybe at like 10 o'clock at night because she didn't want to drive because she was being responsible after having a couple of drinks, if she would deserve to be raped. Because if you're going to say no to that, you cannot victim shame your sisters that you serve with.
I agree with that. I think that's something else that's a whole nother topic, a whole nother issue that hasn't been looked at on this podcast before is the role of other women in these stories of rapes and sexual harassment and stalker situations and all of that stuff, like how we inadvertently help to shame someone with our own behaviors. And so if we can recognize when we're doing that and make those changes and then stand up to the guys on behalf of these girls instead of going along, maybe that will help foster some of these changes as well. What do you think?
I think if we can all embrace being just a little portion of that girl, maybe it's that you tell that one person that please stop farting and locking the door. Sounds silly, but like just that one little thing. Or, you know, or hey, I know that you think it's hilarious that I am going on a date on Friday. I'd like you to please stop. You don't have to stand up for all the injustices in the world, but if we can all just embrace a small part of being able to say, I don't like that one thing, then all of these men that are a part of this boys club will have to start listening. Because then you're not that girl. You're that girl that's with all the other girls.
Mm-hmm. We're all that girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you said that. That's really incredible. And your story is just unbelievable to me in this day and age that you could be, you know, mom shamed. It's infuriated.
Really bad.
it's really bad. You to get out of the military, whereas you, who knows, maybe you might have had a long career. And I feel like I say this a lot too, is that the military loses a lot of good women because of these different situations, the way they handle things, you know. So, I mean, you know, I spoke to a girl who recently did an interview with me, and she, you know, they processed her out when she is a survivor of incredibly severe sexual harassment, and they processed her out after only a year, and she would have done a whole 20 years. Like, she was in love with her job. It just was a particular circumstance that happened that things went wrong for her, but yet she was the more penalized of the two. So, and she lost her option to have a military career. And I just feel like that's really horrible. And I feel like there are so many of us like yourself who may have stayed in and had, and been a beautiful asset, you know?
I absolutely would have stayed in. Mm-hmm. If I would have had one positive female mentor who would have stood up for me, or even a male mentor who would have stood up for me and said, no, she deserves these things. She's damn good at her job. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was damn good. I wrote the technical troubleshooting guide for a new system that went to the ships. I was woken up to go troubleshoot other ships while we were at sea. I was very good at my job, and I really liked my job.
Well,
I would have stayed in.
If no one has told you this, I feel like you're really impressive. So I'm impressed.
Thank you.
I
appreciate it.
The recognition you deserved, because it sounds like you were kicking ass and taking names.
Well, it was, you know, it was their loss, and in the end, it's my gain.
So now you're out, right?
Yes.
How has the transition been thus far?
Well, for me, the transition was a little different because I did go from active duty into the reserves. And so I went from, you know, all day, every day to what was supposed to be 1 week in the month and 2 weeks per year. I ended up being assigned to an operational unit. So it was a little bit more time consuming than the initial idea of the reserves. But going in the reserves gave our family health insurance while I was able to do things like go to school, my husband go to school, all of those things. So it did help us with that. I don't know if I'd recommend it for everybody. Coming off of active duty, it's a very different world. I think I would have preferred to just go straight civilian first.
So what were some of the issues that you faced, and like the differences that you noticed and experienced as a reservist as opposed to active?
Well, being in an operational unit that goes active duty every 2 years, my unit deploys for about a year. So it still felt very active duty in a lot of the mentalities. I did have some positive female role models, but it's still very much a boys club. And when my unit that was deployed when I came into that unit came back, it was a very similar story of, oh, the boys are back. They're all going to be the leaders, even though you've been in charge for the last 6 months.
Oh,
and you can, you know, you can go off to the side now. So.
Wow. So did you just feel discarded?
Oh, absolutely. I was pissed. And I told them. By that point in time, I was completely over being consistently discarded. That's a really good word for the feeling. Mm-hmm. Because multiple times in my career, I came in, I laid groundwork, I set up programs, I fixed things. I came in and I built foundations and I built programs and I fixed things. And I don't just mean that I would fix gear, like radios. I would fix years of paperwork that had been done incorrectly. I would do force revisions. I was the force revision guru. Like, that was what I did. I would fix maintenance books. I would do spot checks. I would go in and I would project manage something. So it was at a phenomenal level to have a male come in behind me and get the credit for it.
Okay, I'm furious.
And once it was at a fantastic operating level, I was then no longer necessary in that position.
You know what I see in my head? I see like a 1950s secretary who does all the work, and yeah. Then the boss comes in and pats her on the butt with like his cocktail and his hand,
yeah.
And goes, "Thanks, honey." You know.
Yep. And that's yes. That is absolutely like, yeah. And by the time that happened to me in the reserves, I kind of said, screw you guys, I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of commitments that I had agreed to. One was taking charge of the tours that happened during Fleet Week in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a couple of obligations that I had promised to do, and then I was like, okay, I rescheduled my drills and I didn't show up until my end of service obligation, which was last week on the 14th. So now I'm officially done. Yeah.
Can you just not show up?
I mean, no, but all they do is process you out. Which right. I was processed out before they could process. Like, there's no real
right.
They could have been jerks to me, but I let them know like, you guys really kind of screwed me on a lot of things. I gave you my all, and I'm done. And I think they saw that they had pushed me, and I was not the only one that left that unit. And one of the hard things with the reserves is they would demand a lot of the same emotional attention that you have to give when you're active duty, but they did so without things like mental health resources. There's no fleet and family services at the reserve base.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You don't have these resources. And when you're active duty, you always have like a telephone card, like a phone number card, and it's your boss and your boss's boss and your boss's boss's boss and people that you can call if there's the chaplain's phone number is usually on there. It's like, okay, I got into a car accident. Who can I call? Or somebody hit me, or I'm in a domestic violence situation, or I'm really drunk and I don't know how to get home. Like, we had these emergency contact cards, and you don't get that in the reserves. You don't have that family, that sense of community mm-hmm. that you get when you're active duty. And that was difficult for me. I missed the community as much as it was difficult for me at times while active duty. Just kind of doing this little half community thing was so much worse.
Yeah. I can get those vibes from you from that. Like, it seems like it just wasn't a good fit because you were giving so much, but getting so little back.
Yes. And again, there are the few individuals that tried really hard for me. I had a retired commander that he tried so hard for me to stay in, but he just came too late in the game for it to make a difference. Because after you get told, oh, we'll put you up for an award so many times and never actually have it go up, you lose your faith mm-hmm. in the people that are supposed to go to bat for you.
Yeah.
And once I lost that faith in the people above me, I knew that it wouldn't be long before I would drop the ball with the people that worked for me. And to me, it was, I can either disappoint the sailors underneath me by screwing up, or I can disappoint them by stepping down now and stepping out now and letting somebody else step in that won't make the mistakes that I might eventually do because I'm so frustrated.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like your morale had just gone way down, and everybody knows when you have low morale, you just don't perform. And then if you're in charge, like, there's no worse position to be in than in a leadership position, and you're completely demoralized and your subordinates are looking up to you and you have nothing to give them.
Yes. And that was the point that I reached. And my number two, my right-hand man, he made rank. He picked up E6. He made first class. And once he made first class, I was like, my job is done. I can officially never show up again. Like,
right on. You're in good hands.
You're in good hands. Like, he was who, even as a second class, he basically did everything because he is very capable. He is very capable. And he's amazing. And he is like a go-getter. And so I was like, all right, you go get it. And it'll be great for your evals. So he was already basically in charge, but now he's got the actual title, and I'm very proud of him.
That's amazing. Okay, so your E6 took over. Now you're free and clear.
Yes.
Of the military experience in total. You're an official vet.
Awesome.
Life is pretty different now. So how are you adjusting?
I think pretty well. I went to college once I got out of the military, my active duty. I enrolled in college and I went to school because that was my goal for enlisting in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought stability to my situation coming out of the military because I had my classmates and I had my classes and I had homework. And even though it was kind of an off schedule, because every day it's a little bit different because it's college, I still had a schedule. And that was really beneficial for me as I transitioned away from active duty life.
That's amazing. Yes, college was amazing for me when I went. It just was what I had always wanted to do. And it took me so many years of going in, and then life would get in the way and I'd get stop, have to drop school, and then I'd go back. And when I finally finished my degrees, I just was like, oh my God, I did it.
I'm so excited. I'm 4 semesters away. I'm so close.
You're going to be there before you know it in the blink of an eye. And it's just such an amazing feeling. I'm excited for you.
Yes.
So tell me now, I happen to know that your beauty line is being an amazing thing for you to pour your energy into and spread into the world. So tell me all about it.
So I am the founder of Cherry River. We are a CBD bath beauty and wellness company. We started not last Christmas, but the Christmas before. So we're almost 2 years into this. Of me turning to my husband in the kitchen and going, hey, honey, you know what would be fun? Let's make CBD bath bombs for Christmas. And my husband just kind of rolled his eyes and was like, you already bought the stuff to make bath bombs, didn't you? And I was like, yeah, of course I did. Because I like to be crafty. And my husband is an artist. And I thought it would be a really fun way for us to kind of be crafty together because I can only draw stick figures. He draws really cool stuff. He does paintings. I've got this octopus. That's an octopus tea
really
party.
Guys, if you could see this, it's really intricate and quite amazing and really unusual, too.
It's an octopus tea party. Like, it's super, super cool.
And they're dressed really fancily.
It's like Victorian tea party.
I love it, actually. Tell him I love it.
I will. He's Octopus Inc. on Instagram if anybody wants to follow him.
Very nice. We'll put it in the show notes.
So I was like, bath bombs, because I love to bake. So I like recipes. He's super arty. He can do stuff with color. And my cousins, my family down in Woodburn, Oregon, they're farmers, and they grow industrial hemp on their farm. And they process it on their farm. So I thought that would be... A fun thing to do.
My tummy hurts.
I know, buddy. I'll get you water in a minute. So I was like, we could get CBD oil. We can make some bath bombs. It'll be super fun. and our friends loved the bath bombs with the caveat of they wanted to buy them. They said, this is a great gift. How do I buy more? And we didn't really think that much of it until we started hearing stories of people going without leg pain for the first time in, you know, a couple of years and sleeping more soundly and their body wasn't hurting them as much. And their dad was able to sleep for 4 hours after taking a bath. As we were starting this, we were also realizing the effect that CBD was having on my husband's quality of life. My husband is also a Navy veteran, and he has a perpetually bad back. He has chronic back pain. He is 6'4", and he was on a ship, so he's going to have back pain. And he started using CBD as well, and he started ingesting it, and he started using a topical muscle gel. And he didn't realize the difference that it had been making in his life until he forgot to take it. And that was around the same time that we started getting this feedback from people about our bath bombs. So we were looking at these different pieces of this puzzle going, we know that it's changing people's lives. Our family farms it. So we have a direct farm relationship for purchasing the oil. We're creative. We have always wanted to own our own business. And I am very passionate about getting CBD into people's hands at an affordable cost. It's a very expensive thing and it doesn't need to be. So we took all of these and we created Cherry River. And we have grown in the biggest ways since we officially started. It'll be 2 years in January was when we actually formed our LLC. And within 2 years, we've launched a new line called Sierra Sport. So we now have two different lines. We were sponsors at the Waterfront Blues Festival in Portland, Oregon, which gets around 80,000 people to come listen to music. And we were the first CBD company approved to do so. We pitched to Shark Tank. I didn't get to actually go on TV, but I pitched to a producer, and that's really, really cool and completely terrifying.
I bet.
And right now we're working with a fashion designer on putting together a quarterly subscription box where he's going to design an article of clothing to partner with one of our items. And
cool.
That's a really big deal. And I got to video conference with this fashion designer that I've been following for years. So that was also very, very cool. I got to fangirl a little bit.
Awesome.
So we're doing these incredible things as we're moving forward. And it's so much fun because it's just, we do it here in our house. We work in our garage. And before that, we worked on our kitchen counter. And it's just being able to look at things and going, okay, my friend is a nurse and she has plantar fasciitis. And so her feet are always bothering her. What can I make for her that's going to give her a better quality of life and help her with her pain management? And then I make it. And then our customers start to buy it and it just blows up. It's so cool. It's so fun.
Amazing. That's total alignment. It, you know, it's meant to be when the momentum just starts carrying you forward.
Yes.
So awesome. So how can we find you?
You can find us online at cherryriver.net. You can also Google Cherry River CBD, and we are the only Cherry River CBD company out there. We are on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is at cherry.river.cbd, and I highly recommend following our social media because that is where I post our sales, our special codes, and where I run a lot of promotions, like win a free of whatever I've decided that I'm making next. It also gives a little bit of personal insight into our lives because we do live in the day of social media. So I share some pictures of my kids here and there. I share pictures of my husband because we're a family-owned business. We are from seed, from the plant growing in the ground until I put it in your final product. The CBD oil is in my family's hands, whether it's my cousins or my dad with actually extracting the oil, or to me, when I'm putting it in your final product, we know where the CBD is every step of the way.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And as a chronic pain sufferer myself, I find that CBD is super beneficial. And as I always say, if you have not tried it or used it, and you live maybe in a state that it's not legal yet, or it's just a new thing, do the research. Don't try to open your mind. I encourage you to open your mind to it, because it's amazingly beneficial. CBD has really helped me to live a primarily functional life again, helped me ease a lot of my pain. And the idea that I can get it in a bath bomb just sounds delightful.
I'll have to send you one, because it's a pretty magical experience. I'm not going to lie. I am incredibly proud of my formula for the bath bomb. And there isn't anyone else that has one quite like mine. And we also put 100 milligrams of CBD in it.
Oh, wow.
So it packs a punch.
Well, it sounds like a fun time, especially for a girl who loves to lounge in a bathtub. So if you're like me, I highly suggest that you go online and follow Cherry River everywhere. I will, of course, put all the links in the show notes, but you will have to copy and paste them into your browser and find her that way. And I am so delighted that you told us all about those products, because I think that these new alternative medicines leave you feeling less polluted, but so much better, and are just needed. So, you know, I support that, and I hope everyone will try them. So I have one more question for you before we wrap it up. And my final question for you today, Allison, is what advice would you have? Any tips, tricks, or strategies for our sisters who are coming behind you, either through their transition or wanting to start their own business or how to thrive in life in general? What would you say to them?
The biggest thing that I would say is don't be scared to go back to school, even if you aren't sure what you want to do yet. The GI Bill is an amazing benefit, and it can help you with immediate income when you're fresh out of the service and you're not quite sure where to go, and it never hurts to have more education. My other really big piece of advice is apply for unemployment when you get out. You qualify for it. It's as you're trying to establish your life as a civilian, figuring out where you're going to live, trying to find a job, trying to reacclimate to talking to people without using military jargon. And I still do it. I still say things like T-way. I know that it takes a little period of adjustment. And so don't be scared to take the things that you have earned from the time that you have served. And unemployment benefits are one of those things. Make sure that you have everything documented, and make sure that if you need to go to the VA, that you can. I know that people talk about how scary the VA can be and how it's a broken system. It's still better to have a system than nothing at all. Set up a PCM, find a doctor, or find a safe spot. So when you're struggling because you feel like there's nobody out here in this world that really understands you right now, because you're surrounded by civilians who would probably yell something negative at you about the current political climate if they knew that you were in the military, so you don't say anything at all. Mm-hmm. Find that safe space so you have that person. And maybe to start with, it's a doctor. Maybe you can find a veteran community wherever you go, where you can find people, where you can share that story. Where you can find that sense of community and have those people that will have your six. So that would be my biggest advice. Ask for help. Don't let the stigma of asking for help making you appear weak stop you from asking for help, because it will help you live your best life so much more quickly.
That's amazing. What great advice, and several pieces of it too, all really, really important and very useful. So I'm sure you've helped someone. And I always say, if we help at least one person, then we've done our job, right? So thank you. Thank you for that advice. I greatly appreciate you coming on this podcast and sharing your story and being so open and candid about your experiences, Allison. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was a fun experience. It was a little more emotional than I expected. This was a lot of fun, and thank you so much.
And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. But before I do, I'm going to say, go and check out Cherry River. Look out for Allison. She's doing big things. And buy these products and come and join our Female Veterans Podcast community on Facebook, where we can continue our talk about our stories and just build a sisterhood and a community where we can support each other. And other than that, I want to thank you for listening. I appreciate you so, so much. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you next week.